What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the One Man's Opinion Podcast. I am your host, Noah Gillian. So happy you decided to join in today. It is the 6th of October, 2021, and we are here today to recap another great week in sports. On today's episode, we're going to be looking back to the Week 4 showdown between the Eagles and the Chiefs. Also, we will be visiting the betting corner, as well as bringing on our underdog correspondent Kona to provide her picks for the weekend. Now, before we get started, if you want, you can find us on social media. You can find me at Noah Gillian, and you can also find the show's account at One Man's Opinion 17 on Twitter. So without further ado, let's just jump right into it. All right, to start off today, we are going to be talking about the Eagles and Chiefs matchup that took place over this past weekend. And was it a matchup? Let's just put it that way. The Eagles ended up losing 30-42 to the Chiefs, dropping their record to 1-3. Pretty interesting game for the Eagles. Personally, my thoughts on the game. It really didn't get out of hand until the late Tyreek Hill touchdown, the kind of fadeaway jumper that Mahomes took that floated it up to Tyreek Hill for his third of the day. Yes, third of the day. But it wasn't really out of hand at any point before that. They were right there. You know, obviously, they left a lot of things on the board, whatever the case may be. But, you know, ended the first quarter with a 10-7 lead, went into halftime, down 21-13. But, you know, we're right there. We're hanging around, and that's kind of leads me into my next point. We'll get into the offense here as I go through this, but you know, our offense was able to move the ball up and down the field against the Kansas City Chiefs, you know, the reigning AFC champions and, you know, a Super Bowl team last year. And, you know, it was really encouraging to see. We were able to hang with them. You know, we scored early. We're able to continue to drive it into the red zone. And, you know, part of that was the Chiefs' defense, you know, simply not being that good. I think they have a lot of holes on their defense. They were even missing, their star defensive tackle, Chris Jones, and you know that was a big loss for them, you know, even before the game started. And you know, it made an impact, especially for the Chiefs. And you know, we were able to move the ball. They didn't really have too much resistance in the secondary to really combat what the Eagles wanted to do. And Jalen Hurts really was able to throw the ball around. And one part of that being that the Chiefs defense simply wasn't that good. But another part of it, and you know, more concerning for the Eagles, I was just going kind of into what everything they did well. They were able to move the ball. You know, not the Chiefs weren't really providing that much resistance. But at the end of the day, and this is the most concerning for the Eagles, the efficiency once they got into the red zone. They flashed a stat up. The CBS broadcast flashed a stat up during the game, and it had the Eagles and the Chiefs both with 4 red zone trips at that point of the game. I believe it was late third quarter, potentially even, you know, mid-fourth quarter. I wasn't exactly sure the time there. But, you know, it had flashed it up. The Chiefs had 4 red zone trips and 4 touchdowns. 100%. Eagles had 4 red zone trips as well. They had 1 touchdown and 3 field goals. And that, you just can't do that. Especially against these really, really potent offenses. These very upper echelon teams like the Kansas City Chiefs. You just cannot continue to come away with points. You can't come away with points left on the board. I mean, those 12 points literally were the difference in the ball game. The 12 points I'm referencing being the 3 field goals as opposed to scoring, you know, 3 touchdowns on top of the one that they already had. Those 12 points literally were the difference in the ball game. And obviously, if they score those touchdowns instead of field goals, you know, the game's played out differently down the stretch. However, when you're looking at it at the end of the game and you're seeing how the numbers add up, that's the difference. That's where the numbers went. And you just left them there on the board. And that's been the one thing that has, you know, constantly been a criticism for me so far of the Eagles. Like, you know, like I'm trying to maintain the same the same kind of headspace with the team, you know, taking it one week at a time, not really having too much expectation for the team this year. But, you know, there's certain things that, especially with a new head coach, you'd like to see the Eagles excel at. You know, one thing being third down efficiency, you know, another being red zone efficiency. And that has been an area this year that has sorely underperformed. And, you know, this was a problem in the San Francisco game, which was especially prevalent. You know, the Atlanta game and the Cowboys game, you kind of got to take those ones out because we pretty much blew Atlanta out of the water there. You know, they weren't really close. We were finishing drives, but we did. We got out big on them. So that was it. And Atlanta's not very, very good team. So we'll kind of take that one out. And then the Cowboys game, yeah, we were close, but, you know, it was never as close as the score may have indicated at any point during that game. So you really look at the Chiefs game and the 49ers game as kind of your barometer games that, you know, were close but ended up not going our way. And in my opinion, the key difference to that was the red zone efficiency. You know, the Eagles in that game had a trip in the San Francisco game where they went down and they went four and out from the 5-yard line. And they had another possession where they went down and kicked a field goal. And now they also had a field goal that was blocked too. So there was a lot of points left on the board. However, the Eagles only lost 17-11, I think was the final score. So you're talking about it from a sense, these are not blowout losses outside of the Cowboys game and outside of the Atlanta game, you know, 1-1 from those two games. But these two games were both winnable games. And I know you don't really think that when you're going against the Kansas City Chiefs and, you know, all you really see is the final score, we lost, blah, blah, blah. But when you actually watch it, the Eagles were competitive in this game. Obviously, their defense is what I'll get into in a few minutes, but the defense wasn't there. So the offense was really doing their best to keep the team in the game. And they did. They performed very, very well. I'm going to get into the stats in a few minutes, too, just so we can go through them. But, you know, it's just something that great teams finish in the red zone. And we literally, all we have to do is just go to the other side of the ball and see that the Chiefs had 4 touchdowns on 4 red zone trips. They know how to score in the red zone. They get down to the 5, they get down to the 2, the 1, and they know how to finish off those drives. And, you know, a lot of that is Andy Reid and the tremendous play calling they have. A lot of that is Patrick Mahomes, probably the best quarterback in the NFL at this point. And, you know, all the weapons they have. But at the end of the day, Andy Reid's calling the plays, getting them in the right position, and the players have to execute. And now maybe Sirianni has the right play calls and the players just aren't executing them, or Sirianni's not getting the right calls and Jalen Hurts is just going with it because he doesn't have a better check or a better option to go to. But at the end of the day, that's an area that's got to improve. Now, when we start looking at big pictures, you know, we're only going 1 week at a time here. We're just going from there, and we're not really trying to get too crazy, but you know, when you're looking at it, we really have to just kind of pick areas that you can improve on, that you have the opportunity to improve on. Like, the Eagles aren't going to drastically improve their talent of the roster. They're not going to drastically improve their quarterback. You know, they're not going to drastically improve these big picture things. But, you know, when we're getting to the red zone and we're just not finishing it. So that's one thing that I really, you know, kind of feel strongly about this Eagles team, and I really think it's an important thing, especially in this game. It was very, very prevalent. So I did kind of go off on a little bit of a tangent there on the offense and kind of that thing there. Now as we swing it to the defense, I'm not going to talk too much about the defense because let's just call it what it is. They did not look good, but I'm not going to ding them a ton, mainly because of the great passing attack of the Chiefs. Andy Reid, you know, it's very tough to stop this Chiefs offense. I wish the run game was a little bit more stymied for the Chiefs than it was. You know, they were able to run the ball. They ended up with 200 team rushing yards. 102 of those came from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. 26 of them came from Patrick Mahomes. And this was just a tough one. Like, we had a possession in the second quarter, 3rd and 15. We backed them up. It was a big, big play. And Patrick Mahomes scrambles for 15 yards and gets the first down. And what do you know? They drive right down, score a touchdown. And that's just those back-breaking plays you can find within the game. And, you know, you're not going to win very many games if you give up a 100-yard rusher and also have the other quarterback rush for over 5 yards a carry when he's toting it. And, you know, they did a pretty good job defending, you know, the pass, I guess, for everybody outside of Tyreek Hill. The main focus of the defense was Travis Kelce, and, you know, you see what happens when you leave Tyreek Hill on an island out there. it was not good. 11 for 186 and 3 touchdowns for Tariq. So overall defensively, I don't even know what to even think about that because, you know, their game plan, I'm assuming, was to take Travis Kelce out of the game, which I guess you could commend them for that. They did, but they really didn't do anything else well. The Chiefs, you know, gashed them on the ground, gashed them through the air. They had 471 total yards, 7.5 yards a play, 31 first downs, 9 for 10 on third down. Like, are you kidding me? 9 for 10? Like, that's just ridiculous. You're not going to win many games by allowing the other team 90% third down efficiency. You're just not. And, you know, the Eagles only had one less minute of time of possession. They won the turnover battle. They only had 3 more penalty yards. They pushed on punts. They had more total plays. It had 10 less total yards. But when you allow a team to finish every single drive, when you allow a team to go 90% on third down, these are the type of things that happen. And conversely, you don't score on your own chances. These are the things that tend to happen. So those are kind of my general thoughts on the game. And I just did kind of want to blitz through the stats of the team and just kind of talk about some players individually as we go through there. Jalen Hurts had a pretty solid day. He did throw the ball 48 times, which I think is way, way, way too much, probably 18 too many. But he did complete 67% of those 48 attempts for 387 yards and 2 touchdowns. So, you know, I think he did well with the plays that were called and the game plan that was called, the defense he was going against. Like I said, the defense of Kansas City isn't super impressive, so, you know, I think it's a good performance considering the circumstances. However, I'm not going to take anything away from Jalen Hurts there. 67% completion percentage, 387 and 2. I mean, I'll take that all day. I just wish that we would knock his attempts down a little bit. And that brings us to the running backs here. Miles Sanders, I mean, we had 10 carries to our running backs, which is better than 3, but Miles Sanders had 7 of those for 13 yards. Kenneth Gainwell had 3 carries for 31 yards and a touchdown. Gainwell also chipped in 6 receptions for 58 yards through the air, so 9 total touches for Gainwell and 89 yards and a touchdown, so a really good game from Gainwell and someone who I've been very, very impressed with. You know, not just from an athleticism perspective, which I think we all kind of recognized when he broke into the league, but, you know, just his ability to run the ball, especially in short yardage. He's done really well on the goal line, especially punching in a lot of short yardage touchdowns, 2-point conversions. That's been one thing I've been really impressed with. And, you know, Miles Sanders is obviously a big play waiting to happen. He also had 3 catches for 34 yards, so he ended up with 47 total yards on the day on 10 total touches. So, you know, I still think we need to lean more on the run personally. I mean, 10 carries to your running backs is not going to get it done. Jalen Hurts also did tack on 47 yards on the ground for 8 carries, on 8 carries, I should say. And that is something I would love to see continue. He needs to have at least 6 to 8 designed runs, even if they're scrambles as well. He needs to have at least 6 to 8 carries a game to be his best self and also help the offense out as a whole, because, you know, when he rolls out and when he gets active with his legs, the defense has to account for that. And that's one less man in coverage. That takes a little bit off the plate of Jalen Hurts down the field. It helps the wide receivers out a little bit. So that's one thing I'd love to continue to develop with Jalen, but we got to keep going to these running backs, because that's how you get more linebackers on the field. That's how you get more mismatches for your wide receivers. And that's how you really, you know, separate yourself as an offense when you're not just so one-dimensional like the Eagles have been so far this year. But with those 48 attempts, those 387 yards from Hurts, there were a lot of good performers through the air. The main being Devontae Smith, 7 receptions for 122 yards. Just a great game from Devontae. A number of highlight reel catches. We actually were going to him a bunch. Could have had an even bigger game if he didn't step out of bounds on a deep touchdown catch. Like, I don't think I've ever seen, I've seen it once or twice before, but to see it in, you know, 2 out of the last 3 weeks for the Philadelphia Eagles, it's unbelievable. And 2 different receivers nonetheless. Like, a beautiful ball from Jalen Hurts and his receivers get pushed out of bounds and still make the catch and score a touchdown, so it gets reviewed. But then it's just, I mean, Smith could have had an 8 for 160 and a touchdown and have a true breakout game, but You know, still had 7 for 122, so he was still very heavily involved and was a mismatch for Kansas City the entire game. Great game for the tight ends. Zach Ertz had 6 receptions for 60 yards. Dallas Goedert had 5 catches for 56 yards and scored a touchdown. So that was very, very good to see out of those two. Ertz looked great. Goedert looked great. And I'm happy that they're both on the field and getting looks. Already kind of mentioned Gainwell and Sanders' production through the passing game, so we won't spend too much time there. I'll kind of get a wrap-up of the rest of the wide receiver room here. Quez Watkins had 3 catches for 33 yards. Greg Ward Jr. had 1 catch for 15 yards and a touchdown, came with 3 seconds left, so he wasn't really involved in the game. And then Jalen Reagor, 1 catch for 9 yards. I wish he was a little bit more involved. I don't have the target counter in front of me, how many targets he received. However, watching the game, you know, going back and watching highlights again, wasn't really involved at all. His one catch he looked good on, but I think he's also someone I'd like to get a little bit more involved in the passing game as well. But overall, I mean, the receivers played well. The running backs looked all right. You know, Miles looked all right. Jalen Hurts looked pretty good. But at the end of the day, it just, we didn't finish drives. And that ended up being the difference in the game. Also, one more little point before we move on here that I did want to touch on in regards to the Philadelphia Eagles and the coaching staff at that point. It's just the lack of discipline. I believe the Eagles lead the league in penalties and penalty yardage. They also, you know, had more penalty yards and more penalties than Kansas City in this game. And it's just something that needs to stop if you're going to be an elite team in this league. You can't beat yourself, especially leaving points on the board as well as giving the other team more opportunities and more yards. It's just something bad teams do to make themselves worse. And they, you know, the Eagles are really going to need to figure that out if they want to be competitive in these games, because the more they shoot themselves in the foot, it's just like, I don't even know how they still have feet left after the amount of times they've shot themselves in the foot on this short season already. Only 4 games in, I can't believe it. But that's just another thing they got to get fixed in time for their next game, which will be against the Carolina Panthers, who are currently 3-1 on the year after suffering their first loss of the season last week to the Cowboys. So I'm going to kind of go into a little bit of a preview for that game now. The Panthers are a little bit of middle of the pack offensively, within many of the key team statistics, placing them right in the middle third of the league. But defensively is truly where they make their money this year. After really investing last season in the defense, they're really starting to see their development take the next step. They rank third in opponents' points per game at 16.5, and they also rank third in yards allowed per game in 251.5. So both very, very good figures and very important metrics, limiting your opponents' points and yards allowed. They also do a tremendous job on third down, which is, you know, this has been why they've been so successful this year, only allowing teams to convert on third down opportunities 23.8% of the time. And if I pull up my statistics real quick, let me see. I believe that is a top 5 rank in the league, but I will double check that before I get ripped everywhere else. Their third down, there's number 1 in the league. I don't know if I said that or not, but number 1 in the league, getting teams off the field in their third down opportunity percentage. So that is really, really crucial for the Eagles to succeed on third down against a team that does a tremendous opportunity locking all windows and doors. Shout out to Mark Zumoff. One area, though, where I do believe they're going to be susceptible, and an area where the Eagles may be able to, quote, get right in, is the running game. And I kind of talked about this already, right? So the Panthers do a great job defending the pass, only allowing quarterbacks to complete 58% of their throws, which is a top 5 mark in the league, as well as only allowing 156.5 passing yards per game, which is a top 2 mark in the league. However, when it comes to defending the run, they're much more susceptible. The Panthers allow 4.5 yards per rush, good for 23rd in the league, as well as giving up 95 yards per game. Now that is the 10th best figure in the league. They are a top 10 in terms of that. But 95 is still a lot of yards. The Eagles haven't even sniffed that. They might have in the first game, but we have not sniffed 95 yards in a game in multiple weeks. So I do think the best method at which to attack this defense is going to be through the running game. Not only because the Panthers, you know, struggle with it on a yards per rush, you know, figure, but it's something that the Eagles are desperately going to need this year. They're desperately going to need it to get going if they're going to compete the rest of the year and, you know, into the years to come, especially for Nick Sirianni as a new head coach, first-year head coach. Another reason why I think the running game is so important, and this is a very crucial point, and this is going to be a very big point for the game, is the Panthers have the number one sack percentage in the league at 11.38%. 11.38% of all plays this defense has seen, they have gotten a sack from, which is absolutely ridiculous. They are all over the quarterback. They are all in the backfield. And especially with the Eagles having their offensive line banged up. Now, Lane Johnson has reported to the facility. He has, you know, started to get back into the fold. So we expect him to play. However, you're still relying on three backups to play on your offensive line against a team that is great at rushing the passer. So I think getting the running game going will help the offensive line against the defensive line that has just been extremely, extremely potent for, sacking the quarterback. So right now, the Eagles are currently 3.5-point underdogs to the Carolina Panthers. Over-under is currently set at 45.5. Panthers have actually moved half a point in the spread. So they opened up at 3, now they're at 3.5. They got more money as being bet on the Panthers in this game. I think this is going to be a tough one for the Birds. Anyone that watched the Panthers versus the Cowboys last week, they definitely looked like they were for real. Obviously, the Cowboys look really good this year, and the Panthers definitely deserve to be on the field with them. Sam Darnold's rushing ability has been a key storyline for them this year. Currently leads the league in rushing touchdowns, which I don't think anyone had that on their bingo card through week four. But, obviously no Christian McCaffrey in the lineup. However, they still have playmakers all over the field. Chuba Hubbard's filling in for him, as well as two great wide receivers in DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and then a rookie from LSU, Terrace Marshall Jr. They just have a lot of explosion on offense, and I'm really nervous about those wide receivers. And so hopefully we are able to at least take DJ Moore or someone out of the game to really, you know, ease up pressure on the rest of the team. However, it is going to be a very, very interesting game. I don't know how I would even play that number. I'm probably going to end up, when Sunday rolls around, taking the Eagles to cover, but that's just me. And that's a one fan's opinion. But with that, we are going to be moving into the next segment of the show, which is the betting corner. Yes, it is here to look ahead at the week 5 games in the NFL. There's a couple games that I like. I got two games that I'm probably going to play, and then a couple other lines that I'm interested to keep an eye on as the week goes on. So two of my more favorite lines for this week, first being Titans -4 at Jacksonville. And now this one is narrative street all over. First of all, on the Jacksonville side of things, you have the huge Urban Meyer scandal, loss of trust in the locker room. Like, it seems like the sky is falling down there. And then you also have the Titans, who just went to the New York Jets and got embarrassed. I say got embarrassed, they didn't get blown out, but they lost to the Jets, giving the Jets their first win of the year. And I think that is really going to piss off the Titans. You know, Mike Vrabel's a really good coach, and I think he's really going to get on his team this year to make a statement this week against a very poor Jacksonville team. I think all the distractions around the Jaguars this week, along with a pissed off Titans coming into play. They're also a divisional foe of one another, so they know each other well. I think this is going to be just a bloodbath for the Titans. -4, I feel like, is too low. Titans haven't done themselves any favors this year, but at the same time, they're also 2-2. You know, it's not like the sky is falling really for them. So I think this is an easy number for them to cover. Derrick Henry should have a monster game. Julio Jones is questionable for this game. So if he plays, that's an even bigger even bigger boost for the Titans. However, as of yesterday, they ruled him out. So he is not going to be playing, actually. So I take that back. However, I still like the Titans in this one. I just don't think Jacksonville's that good. So 4 points in a game where the Titans are going to come in pissed off, I like that. I also like this game, the Thursday night game, a massive, massive game in the NFC West. The Rams travel to Seattle to play the Seahawks, and they're currently 2.5-point favorites. I love the Rams here. I think they're definitely an NFC. They're definitely one of the NFC favorites to come out of the conference. They're 2-2 against the spread this year, 3-1 straight up, and they lost to Arizona last week. But I think they're ready to go into Seattle and make some noise. I mean, Seattle's had a little bit of an up and down year after beating the Colts week one, lost two straight games as favorites to the Titans and the Vikings, but then went on the road against San Francisco and won as an underdog. So, well, and I picked Kona was all over Seattle last week as 2.5-point underdogs. That line just didn't make sense. But this line, I believe, does. I think it is going to be a close game. It's in Seattle here. So, you know, what the spread is telling us is that on a neutral field, the Rams would be 5.5-point favorites. And now, while I do think that may be a little bit high, I'm willing to swallow the 2.5, especially since I have that 2.5 with the hook, or that 2 with the hook. It's not that -3 yet, so we could still win with the Rams winning by a field goal. Like the Rams here. Like it. I love it. Rams -2.5 at Seattle. I got two other lines here, too, I'm also interested in. The first one being the Chiefs -2.5 at home against Buffalo. I really like Buffalo. I think they're a very, very good team. But, I mean, first of all, they're at home. So, on a neutral field, what the line is telling me is that they would rate Buffalo as -0.5 on a neutral field. And I just don't think that's the case. I know the Chiefs' defense is atrocious and the Eagles just hung 30 points on them. However, I don't really think Buffalo's, you know, they're going to be able to exploit them, but I just don't know how much they're really going to be able to stop the Chiefs either. I think this is a potential for an over. I mean, it's 56.5-point over-under. This is the highest over-under of the week, so this is going to be an absolute shootout. And if it comes down to it, give me Patrick Mahomes over anybody in the league. When it comes to a shootout. So I like the Chiefs -2.5, especially at home. And like I said, with the Rams -2.5, I love the 2 with the hook there, but I'm going to wait a little bit to see if I'm going to play this one or not. This is going to be an interesting one to see develop. Another line here that just doesn't really make sense to me. The Steelers as 1-point favorite at home against the Broncos. Someone's got to explain this one to me, because what my sources right here are telling me is that the Steelers opened at 4.5-point favorites. And what did they open at this week? Okay. Maybe it was 4.5, and yet now it's down to 1, which means everybody's on the Broncos. But at the same time, there's more money on the Steelers. B, Drew Lock might be starting for the Broncos, his first start of the year in Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh has been embarrassed everywhere they've gone this year. They're currently 1-3 after beating the Bills week one, a great win against the Bills week one. But, you know, after that, they've just been gotten embarrassed. They lost 2 straight games as a favorite and then lost by Green Bay by 10 points in a game that really was not that close. However, we got to look at the matchup here. I know Denver's 3-1, but that was with Teddy B. That was with Teddy cover the spread. That was with Teddy ball game here. We're talking about Drew Lock, someone who is not the answer at quarterback. And I think going into Pittsburgh, facing that defense, I think Big Ben will score enough points to cover 1 point. You're telling me they can't win 20-17 against the Denver team with Drew Lock as their starting quarterback? I'm talking myself even more and more into this line, but I think Pittsburgh -1 against Denver is definitely one that we got to keep an eye on. Especially based off the line movement already. If this flips and goes to Denver as a favorite, sign me up. And now I will say this. This is one I'm just interested in and why it's not a love. I do want to see if Bridgewater does end up suiting up for this game, because I did get a report today. He is progressing through the concussion protocol and feeling better, but he's not expected to practice today on Wednesday. So that is going to be something to keep an eye on as the week progresses. And now the moment you guys have all been waiting for, Kona's underdog of the week. Now, it was a little bit of a rough week for Kona last week, no pun intended. I'm just going to come out and say it. But we went 1-2 last week. We hit Seattle, but we lost with Minnesota, and we lost with Denver, bringing our record now to 1-3 on the year. But come on now, that has not stopped Kona from crunching the numbers on the week 4 lines to find the edges for us to exploit. Now, for this week's games, Kona likes two matchups. So the first is Bengals +3 versus the Green Bay Packers, and the Washington football team +2 versus the New Orleans Saints. And the reasoning behind these picks, first of all, both teams are at home, which is big for me, as I just love home underdogs is, you know, something big for me. And I don't really believe in the Saints offense. Conversely, I do believe in the talent of the Washington defense, in that it's only a matter of time before they start making some plays and they're going to start altering games. I mean, there's just too much talent on that defensive line for them to be as bad as they've been. I mean, I'm going to pull it up right now so I can put some numbers behind it here, but at least from what I've seen, I mean, here we go, Washington defense. I mean, they're 30th in opponents' points per game. They're 29th in opponents' yard per game. They're 20th in opponents' yards per play. They're 32nd in opponents' third down conversion. They're allowing 3.2 touchdowns per game defensively, and that's 24th best in the league, which is not good. I think there's just way too much talent on this defense to really stay stagnant this long. Give me Washington, who recently got another big playmaker back in Curtis Samuel, so I think that's going to be a big boost for Washington's offense to cover that +2. The Bengals are also another home dog that Kona likes, and, you know, being a dog herself who spends most of her time at home, I can see where she's coming from liking both of these home dogs. However, that is not the only reason. First of all, this line has already moved 3 points towards Cincinnati. It opened at Green Bay -6, and now it's down to the current line of Green Bay -3. And that is in part due to the disparity in the money of the game. There's a 25% difference in the total number of bets wagered and the total amount of money wagered in this game, with Cincinnati having 44% of all dollars wagered on them to cover, but only 19% of total bets backing them. This means the sharper and generally better with deeper pockets or professionals see Cincinnati holding value in this line. So Bengals +3 against the Packers. Yes, I am nervous. Packers are a great team with a great quarterback. However, give me the Bengals +3 at home. Give me the football team +2. And Kona is going to get back to 500 on the year. All right, everyone, that's going to wrap it up for today. Just to put a bow on the show, please hit that subscribe button if you enjoyed what we talked about today. Also, if you enjoyed the podcast as a whole, please leave a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to on. It would really mean a lot, and it would help the podcast reach new audiences. It only takes a couple seconds, so if you guys have a spare second or two, just scroll down, hit that 5-star. It would really mean a lot. If you want to follow us on social media, check the description below. I hope you all enjoyed, and I can't wait to see you back here again next time. I am your host, Noah Gilliam, but hey, this is just one man's opinion.